welcome to a new school year. Anyone feel like they got hit by the bus of busyness all of a sudden? You can just raise your hand. You're just feeling like, oh my gosh, yes. Thank you for your honesty, all one of you. Summer vacations are done. You've got maybe kids back in school. Maybe some sports have started if you're doing that. Maybe you're back to work or working a new job or a different schedule. Just feels like life picks up a little bit at this time. Maybe it feels like it picks up a bit at this time for you. Does anybody, just think about it, does anybody already feel a little buried by the start of the fall? Let's just have a moment of honesty and confession. You're just feeling like, oh my gosh, it's 2 weeks in and I'm dying a little bit. Nice. Maybe though, some of you love it. I know for a fact that some of you, my beloved church family, are what we would call go-getters. You always have a running list of things that need doing, tasks to finish, and boxes to check, projects to complete. And if you're honest, you kind of like the fall and when it starts, when it just feels like you get some energy off of everybody's kind of starting some new things. There's a hustle and bustle to the world right now. Some of you having a full life with lots to do and maybe as little downtime as possible. That's your idea of success and flourishing. Having unchecked boxes, things that are not done, is a source of stress for you. So you just keep going. Raise your hand if that's you. Nice. Way to go, Isaac. I'm happy to contribute to you checking off the box of moving so many things. Way to go. I'm going to show you a picture, don't put it up yet, of an... What? It flashed? Did you see it? Oh. She's so quick. Julia is truly amazing. I was going to give you a trigger warning, but if you didn't see what it was, if you're a clean garage person, you might just want to look away. This feels like confession. You can put it up now. This is our garage right now. Ooh. Yes, Higgins, that is your camping gear. If you want it back, you better come soon because it might get absorbed into the vortex. This is our garage. This is my undone project right now. And I regret putting this in the notes because I just looked at it and I got instantly stressed. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have so much work to do. This is the thing that is undone in my life right now that I have yet to do. And just in case this is really bothering, we can go to the next slide. This is a palate cleanser. If looking at that first picture is just like, I can't. This is not what my garage will ever look like, but some people maybe get their garages like that. Or you can take them down. In my defense, the garage has been the place that suffers because of other projects that we are doing have done on the inside of our house. We recently put up a wall, and by we, I mean my friend Jordan Schubel put up the wall for me, and we made other people pay for it. I'm just kidding. thank you. You're catching on. It was a huge wall. It's amazing. On one side of it, we made a desk with bookshelves and cabinets, kind of a homeschool area. And on the other side, it's now an additional bedroom for our boys. Shout out to Jordan Schubel and Schubel Construction. If you need to hire someone, he's awesome. Before that, we had a kitchen sink leak. And it essentially forced us into like a full kitchen remodel, which involved doing new flooring throughout like almost our entire house. And the garage is the place that suffers because of all that work. It has been the place to catch the collateral damage of things moving around the house, things shuffling from room to room. It's a disaster and a source of shame and felt like a confession of sin to you to show you that. It's an unfinished project. To clean this garage. It is not done. It is undone. Anyone else have an unfinished project? Can I just have some solidarity, some people? Thank you. An unfinished thing. Can you be stressed about it right now? Just like help yourself be stressed right now about it so that we're all in the same boat. It's not that we are lazy people, some of us, hopefully. It's that there are 100 other things to do. Demands of life, daily or weekly chores that stop us from getting other things done, like our jobs, where we have to earn money so that we can eat food. It never ends. There's always something to do. You're welcome for reminding you of this fact. I think it's maybe one of the greatest tensions, potentially even like a pain point in all of life, is balancing work and projects and things that need to get done, meeting our basic needs through working and making money, projects to improve your life or to make your current life work a little bit better. It just feels like it never ends. If I finished this garage project tonight, which is impossible, there would be 17,000 other things that I would still feel like, oh, got to do that now. There is, I think, a terrible, very effective lie that we are breathing in right now. Maybe every one of us buys into it, maybe unintentionally, but the lie is that you are what you do, or maybe what you fail to do, that we carry in our identity whether or not we're succeeding at all of the things that make up our life, or whether we feel like we're letting things go, falling behind, not doing all that we could do. When my garage door is open for my neighbors to see, there's a part of me that legitimately feels vulnerable. Like, they're like seeing into my soul. That is sometimes how I feel. They're seeing the real me, the failure to prioritize and get things done. They're seeing laziness, a lack of organization. Just today, my kids were playing out in the front yard, and one of my kids opened the garage door to get something, and I was a little short. I was like, shut the garage door. I don't want them to see it. Like an 8-year-old kid that's not going to care, but I cared. It feels like a snapshot of me, and I know that's not necessarily true. But in response to this lie that you are what you do, some of us kind of give up. Maybe we just succumb to that feeling of feeling like a failure at our life, living in shame for all the things that we're not doing. That's probably more me. Other times we accept that lie as fact and we dig our heels and we just keep working. If we are what we do, then gosh darn it, I'm just going to keep doing it. I'm just going to grind and keep checking off the boxes, putting in the hours, completing the tasks, and getting things done. So I want to remind us, in case now is a time that you are feeling a little bit like I'm feeling, buried by some unfinished projects, that there is another way, a different way to think about all these things that maybe weigh us down. And this other way is so important, so foundational to our needs as humans, that it is described in the very beginning of the Bible. So if you have one, you can open up to Genesis chapter 1. We are in a kind of on again, off again, probably long series through the book of Genesis. Several months ago, we took 4 weeks-ish, I think, to talk about the literary overview of the first two chapters. And so in case you missed it, I think the point of Genesis chapters 1 and 2 is that it's describing what we can call a cosmic temple, meaning the whole universe is the place that God wants to be, particularly in this thing we call the Garden of Eden. And if creation is a cosmic temple, it means that God wants to be with humans. The temple is where a deity dwells, so that's where God wants to be. And if creation is a temple, that also means not only that God's presence wants to be there, but that we, our humans, are God's priests, temple priests. The words that we use to understand that, the way it's described in Genesis 1 and 2, is that we're made in the image of God. That's like saying we are little statues or temple idols of what the God looks like. That's what humans are. And that we have the role that priests have in a temple, which is that we represent the God of that temple to the rest of the world, and we also represent the world to that God. That's what's being described, I think, as a overarching theme in Genesis 1 and 2, is that this world is God's. He wants to be with humanity, and we have an amazing role to be his image bearers and his priests representing him to the world. So we've done an overview, and now we're going to take just a few weeks to kind of zoom in on just a few things. So today we're going to zoom in on something at the beginning of Genesis chapter 2. In a little while, maybe a few months, we'll zoom in on what it means that humans are made male and female. And we'll take several weeks to unpack what that looks like. But today we're going to look at one particular passage at the beginning of Genesis chapter 2. But before we read it, I want to just describe it. So if you would indulge me, allow me, would you close your eyes if it helps you imagine? If it doesn't help you imagine, you don't have to close your eyes. But imagine that you are Adam or Eve, or just the first human. God has just formed you from the dirt, so to speak, and breathed life into you. Your heart has started to pump. You breathe in the cleanest, freshest air ever to exist, and you look at this breathtaking thing around you called Eden, this garden of delight, and God says, look, everything around you is yours to enjoy, to eat. Isn't it beautiful? And then you see your husband or wife. If you're married, think about your spouse. If you're not married, think about your ideal spouse or something. And God says, they are also yours to enjoy. Isn't she beautiful? Or isn't he a thing to behold? God tells the two of you that you've got this huge, great job to do, which is to rule over, to be in charge of this garden, to kind of cultivate it into something beautiful. And he tells you that you're going to need some help in this job, that you should see if you can figure out how to multiply yourselves. And then he hides his chuckle with a little cough. And then the night falls all of a sudden and you sleep. Okay, you can open your eyes. When you wake up, God says, all right, I'm done with my part. In 6 days, I finished the work that I set out to do. And now on this seventh day, I'm not going to keep working. I'm going to stop. This day, the seventh day, is special. And I want you to also keep it as a special day by doing what I'm doing, which is not working, resting on the seventh day. So we're imagining your first real full day in this new world that you find yourself in is a day to rest, a day to enjoy not your hard work, but God's, a day to enjoy the beauty of the world. It's not a day to rise and grind and get going. It's a day to rise and delight in what God has done and to rest. Let me show you this in the text. So if you've got a Bible in front of you, you can open to Genesis chapter 1. We're going to start at verse 26. God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food to all the beasts and the birds and the creatures that move on the ground. Everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw all that he made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. So God makes mankind in his image. He gives them a task to multiply themselves and fill the earth, to be in charge of this garden. The implication is to extend the beauty and order of the garden out from the garden, out into the world, to fill the earth with more people who bring more beauty and order into the world, just like God's been doing for these first 6 days of creation. But then it says the day ends. It says there was evening and morning, the sixth day. And so it seems that they, though they were just blessed by God and given a job to do, they don't get started right then and there. They're created. God pronounces this blessing over them. He gives them approval and dignity before they had done anything. And they sleep and they wake to their first full day, the seventh day. Chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God pronounces that this seventh day is holy because he rested from his work. The first thing to note in this context, holy doesn't mean like morally pure or righteous or good. It means different, separate or set apart, sacred. This day, the seventh day, is different from the others. It's not another day just like the rest. It's special. And God says it's special because he rested. He stopped working and he rested, enjoying the good world that he had made. So I think it's significant that this seventh day is day one for for humanity. This is their first day. They awake to a world which they did not make and are simply told to rest and enjoy it. They did not need to earn this rest. It's not like a lunch break. It's not a weekend that they earned by putting in their hours. It is a God-designed launching point for the week. He effectively says, you didn't do any of this, you didn't earn this, but rest and enjoy it anyways. So that's the first thing that I just want us to think about, is that in God's world, rest is not earned, it is a gift. Contrast this with the lie of the world, the way the world works that we kind of buy into. Our world would 100% say rest is earned, not given. The weekend is seen as the reward for, or the payoff for a week of work, but according to God's design, rest isn't earned, it's a gift. For now, I want to actually jump ahead a little bit in the story of Scripture and want to develop this idea of the seventh day or the Sabbath a little bit. At the very end of Genesis, God's people wind up in Egypt, and at first this is a good thing because this is how God delivers them and provides food and land for them during a terrible famine. But then eventually there's this new king or a pharaoh in Egypt who does not like that God's people, the Israelites, are there and they have multiplied so greatly. So they are enslaved and horribly oppressed, and Pharaoh commits like mass infanticide, killing all their baby boys. They work in unjust, terrible conditions. You have probably heard the story. They are miraculously delivered and rescued by God, led by Moses through the Red Sea out into the wilderness, eventually to be led to their new land that they call the Promised Land. And as a newly formed people belonging to God who just delivered them, he gives them a number of commandments to kind of outline how he wants them to be, what he wants their life to look like. 10 of these commandments are notable and stick out to us. One of them, of those 10, is to keep or to observe the Sabbath or the seventh day. The word Shabbat, or we get the word Sabbath, in Hebrew just means to cease or to stop, in this case, from work. So let me show you in Exodus chapter 20. You can turn there if you want. It'll be up on the screen. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8 says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, keeping it different or set apart. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. Because the reason why you should do this is because in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. The commandment says to keep the Sabbath because God did. We rest because God rested. He made that day holy and separate, and so Israel is supposed to do as God did and rest. But then, as Israel is like on the edge of arriving in their new promised land, they're being established not as slaves or not as wanderers, but as their own new people in their own new land. God repeats the commandment, but with a different reason. So flip ahead to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Verse 12, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. So far, so similar. The command is to keep the Sabbath, but the reason changes. Verse 15, remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. So this time it's keep the Sabbath, not just because God didn't work on the seventh day. Keep the Sabbath because you are no longer slaves in Egypt. They were oppressed in Egypt, worked to the bone, no rest, treated like machines, their humanity stripped from them. And as they're approaching this new land, being formed as a people of God, God is saying, you will not treat people like this. He's essentially saying to be human is to require rest. And since Israel had experienced the oppression of Pharaoh, who took that gift away from them, They now, as a type of authority in their new land, are supposed to treat both themselves and anyone, any living thing that wanders into their land with reverence to their humanity by ceasing from all work one day a week and resting, just like God designed in the beginning. In other words, another thing to think about, we are not machines, we are humans, and we require rest. Talk about that more in a little bit. God's people eventually get this rule of keeping the Sabbath down. They got it, maybe a little bit too down. You could make the case they got hung up on the rule, forgetting about the intent behind it. The intent was to embrace our limits as humans and receive the gift of God of rest. But Israel grew, it seems, to mostly focus on just following the rule to the letter and forgetting the intent. So we're skipping ahead quite a bit in the story to get our next kind of window into understanding this seventh day concept. We have a Sabbath rest related scene with Jesus, his disciples, and the Pharisees. And we'll read it in Matthew chapter 12, starting in verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grain and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath." He answered, "Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate the Sabbath and yet are innocent? I tell you that something greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." So the law that the disciples in eating the grain were supposedly breaking was picking the grain, which could be considered work if you were picking it with the intent to harvest it and mill it and things like that, which you were not supposed to do on the Sabbath. But they were very clearly picking grains to eat because they were hungry. And weren't ignoring the call to trust God and to rest. But the Pharisees, like they do, they were looking to trap Jesus, call them out on it. Jesus reminds them King David, who they all would have revered and respected, technically broke a commandment, eating bread in the temple that was supposed to only be eaten by the priests, but it clearly didn't violate God's intention with this law. David was on the run for his life from King Saul. He needed provisions and sustenance for himself and some of his men so that they wouldn't die. The point is, for Jesus, there's like the literal letter, the word of the law, and there's also a spirit and an intent of the law, a weightier matter to the thing, which allowed David and Jesus' disciples to prioritize the weightier matter, which is eating so that you don't starve. Jesus then says maybe one of the most important things about this topic in the same story, but in the Gospel of Mark instead, in Mark 2:27, he says that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. This rule, says Jesus, as far back as it goes, all the way to Genesis 2, it was made for the good of humanity. Man wasn't made so that they could follow the rule. The rule was made to help mankind flourish and not work themselves to the point of burnout or death or something. In other words, according to Jesus, rest is not a rigid rule. It's an invitation that will lead to flourishing. So, rest is not earned. It is a gift. It is required because we are not machines. We are humans who require rest. And it is for us today, not a rigid rule to obey, but it is an invitation to a way of life that will lead to flourishing. You guys doing good? Okay. The story of Sabbath rest starts at the very beginning of humanity's existence. It is their first full day. It starts as a rhythm for the world that God designed. This is not a result of the fall. This is not brokenness. This is a good thing. Again, Adam and Eve's first day was an invitation to enjoy God's work and to rest in it. This is, I think, the antidote to maybe what some of us feel right now in a busy season where we're feeling buried by all that there is to do, and an antidote to that lie that says you are what you do. It is a lie. You are who God says you are, and you are made in his image. And yes, we are. You are made to work and to accomplish things and to work hard. And yes, you need to earn a living, but you were not made to receive your identity, your security from what you do. So before we talk about how to accept kind of God's invitation here in Genesis 2 to rest like he did, I want to make you aware of a few resources on the topic. If we finish the sermon or if I finish talking through the text part and you're like, hold on, I got to dig in a little bit more. Garden City by John Mark Comer. Subversive Sabbath, I think I have some pictures up there. Subversive Sabbath by A.J. Svoboda. Sabbath as Resistance by Walter Brueggemann. And then there's another book by Ruth Haley Barton. All four of those, I've read most of them or consulted some of them before, are really good resources if you are wanting to kind of research a little bit about Sabbath. Additionally, the Bible Project has a really great video on this concept. And they also have, if you like really want to dig in, is a podcast series on the significance of the number seven, the seventh day, and seventh day rest. It will probably blow your mind. So those are great resources. You could also, if you just want to figure out, like, how do I start implementing this in my life, practicingtheway.org is a really good spiritual formation resource that has helpful content for you to begin practicing the Sabbath. So the invitation, like right off the get-go, as we start reading the Bible in the second chapter, God is inviting you. I really believe he's inviting you right now to align your weekly rhythm with his. I think God is inviting you still to this day, even though this was a long time ago and it was a law for God's people, it's not a law for us anymore. I still think God is inviting us to align our weekly rhythm with his ancient established rhythm of work and rest. And so the goal, I'm encouraging you to try it, because I think God's inviting us to it, is a literal 24-hour period of rest where you do three things. You stop, rest, and delight. I cannot remember which of those books that came from. I couldn't find it, but it's probably from one of those four books. Stop, rest, and delight. Stop meaning we stop working. We cease. Whether it is your day job or chores or projects, if it falls under the category of should. I should probably do this. A responsible person would probably do this. If it falls into the category of a should responsibility, for one day a week, you stop. The second thing we do is we rest. We do things that are restorative and stop doing the things that may not be considered work or like a project, but things that are draining, the things that don't help us regenerate and rest. So we stop, we rest, and we delight. We take joy and pleasure in the life that God has given us, in the world that he's made. Worship him, eat good food, be outside, things like that. Stop, rest, and delight. It's a very simple invitation. We could almost be done here, but we're not going to be done yet, quite yet. If that's all the invitation that you need, give it a shot. Just go for it. A full day of rest. Maybe that's all the inviting that you need. Maybe you've done a deep dive into Sabbath already. Maybe you've done it a while ago. Maybe this is your reminder to start again or to try again. So if that's you, go get it. Reestablish the rhythm. Keep going. If you've never had a Sabbath rhythm before, maybe you feel like you don't need any more convincing. You're like, yeah, I'm just going to try. One day of rest sounds nice. But I do want to take the rest of the time to talk about reasons why this is hard, or reasons why you might not do this. So the first thing you might say, I can't rest because I don't know how. Perhaps some of you at the beginning who said that you like the lists and you like accomplishing things, maybe this is how you feel. I don't know how. If we're honest, this is probably the most likely reason that we don't rest or struggle to rest well when we try. Good Sabbath rest is a learned skill, and it involves some trial and error. Stop, rest, and delight is a good outline, but you'll have to learn. What does resting and delighting look like for you? It might take a number of weeks to learn. So the first step is to not work, which is not easy, but it is a little bit more concrete. Don't do anything in that should category of your life. Don't do the chores or the projects. But resting and delighting is the part we have to learn and discover. Couple of things about resting and delighting. I think we could probably safely say that binging TV shows or scrolling on your phone for hours and hours is probably not going to bring the kind of rest that we know that we really need. Maybe once in a while you do like an extended edition Lord of the Rings marathon on a Sabbath day, but probably not like all day, every Sabbath, plop on the couch and just watch shows and mindlessly scroll on your phone. I don't think that's good rest. Doing nothing is not the same as resting. It's almost like I was thinking about, it's like recognizing the difference between feeling snacky and feeling actually hungry for like real nourishment. We call both of those things hunger. Sometimes we just say I'm hungry, but at 10 o'clock on a Thursday night, when I say I'm hungry, I'm definitely not hungry. I'm just wanting a snack. I don't actually need food. But at 6 o'clock, if I haven't had lunch, I'm actually very hungry for real nourishing food. So hitting your Sabbath rest day or period or time and going for the couch and for the remote or your phone is could be for you kind of like going for a bag of Doritos when what you really need is like steak and potatoes. So some things that might be actually restorative for you might be putting your phone away for the entire day, not watching TV, might involve reading a good book, making a fire, making a cup of tea or coffee, drinking it slow, ideally like while you're sitting by the fire and reading a book, listening to music, going on a not too strenuous hike or a walk or like a leisurely bike ride, maybe just sitting outside somewhere that you like or sitting on your couch in the quiet, and just being still. Maybe making good food from scratch doesn't feel like work shoulds to you, but it's enjoyable for you. You could probably do that. Take a nap, take multiple naps, play games with your family or friends. The point is, stop the shoulds. Stop doing the shoulds and find the things that are going to be restorative and bring life to you. Experiment, figure out what they are. Another reason, I can't rest because I'm not done yet. There are still things to do. Rest is hard when you've got a mental list that is what we call an intrusive thought. You don't want it to keep coming into your mind, but you can't stop it. You just have a running list always going. I don't know exactly what this is like, but my wife, Kristen, does a little bit. The constant list. If you got work email on your phone and it keeps reminding you of the stuff that you're going to have to do when you get back to work, if every time you go out in your garage to grab something and you see the chaos, it's going to put a damper on things. There's always something to do. Resting is hard because there's always more to do. The work is never done, and that's the point. We have to stop even when it's not done. The work that is required to sustain your life, to make it work, it is never done, and that's the point of Sabbath. We have to stop even when it's difficult, maybe even if it's painful sometimes, so that we remind ourselves, this work is not done, but I can accept my limits and rest anyways. I'm not a machine. I need to take a break. Couple more specific things. Maybe you feel like I can't rest because we need money. I need to take any shift, every shift that I can. I need more hours. Maybe you have to work 6 or 7 days a week. Maybe you have to work multiple jobs or can't take a day off, let alone take a whole day where you're also not doing like the home responsibilities that you have to do. Maybe that just feels impossible. And this is where I'm so grateful we get to lean into Jesus and remember that he said that Sabbath was not made for man, but man was made for Sabbath. This is an Old Testament law for God's people called Israel, but it is a New Testament invitation. You don't have to take a full 24 hours of a Sabbath. It's okay if you feel like you can't. You're not making God angry if you don't. But I would encourage you to figure out what you can do. Figure out if you can do 24 hours, and if you can't, maybe you can do 8 hours or 4 hours. Figure out what you can do. Wake up on your day off, unplug from your phone and your devices, put away your to-do list, and just give yourselves 4 pure hours to acknowledge your limits and rest in God's work. And then at noon or something, you go back to do what you need to do. It's a great option if you feel like you don't have a full 24 hours to do this. Second thing, or another thing, I can't rest. Maybe my spouse and I have different days off or work schedules that are just like not aligning with our ability to rest together. Just going to have to get together and have a good conversation about if this rhythm is important to establish for you and plan out how you'll each do it. Maybe you'll have like 2 or 4 hours that you can Sabbath together. Or maybe you'll have to do Sabbath on different days of the week and you'll have to give that gift to each other of allowing each other resting on separate days off. But the point is you might need to work together, acknowledging that it's not easy, but finding some time for each of you. Another thing, I feel like I can't rest because I'm home with kids. This one is tough, but not impossible. We can start to figure out some things. I talked with my wife, Kristen, about this. We kind of reflected on our journey of learning to practice Sabbath with a number of young kids in the house. And so here's a couple of things that Kristen had to say. One would be adjust your expectations. You do not want to expect magic, especially if it's like a relatively new practice for you, or even if it's a really old practice. Don't expect magic. Don't expect necessarily your kids to understand right away. This is something that, I mean, come on, we are learning how to do this, so we are also, our kids are learning how to do this as well. So don't expect it to be magic right away. Just kind of adjust your expectations. Rest might look different from season to season. When you've got little kids, from when they're a little bit older to when they're even older, adjusting our expectations based on where our family's at and what stage that they're at. Another thing is being willing to surrender, to let things go for a day. You might have to let the laundry sit on the table or hide it somewhere, or you might decide that you need to actually do some things to prepare for Sabbath, like maybe you want to get the laundry done before Sabbath starts, or maybe you want to go grocery shopping before your Sabbath day so that those things are done and checked off and you don't have to worry about them on that day. The last thing that she said was to communicate your desires ahead of time. So particularly if you're Sabbathing with your spouse and your family, figure out what would be really important to you or meaningful to you if you want to take a nap or if you want to sleep in or have the freedom to take a long walk or something. Just sit down with your spouse before the Sabbath and communicate about what would be helpful for you. And I want to say, since we've been talking about me and Kristen doing the Sabbath, we do not do this thing called Sabbath consistently week to week, month to month, year after year. We have had some great seasons of practicing Sabbath where it goes very well. We've had seasons with really crappy Sabbaths where we get mad at each other or mad at the kids. And we've had plenty of seasons where we do half a day of Sabbath or seasons where we don't do it at all. So I'm not trying to paint the picture that this is something that I've like mastered and settled into and it's amazing. But it is something that I am invited to and that you are invited to as well, a rhythm of life that can help us flourish. Last example, last reason why we might not. I can't rest because if I stop, everything will crumble. Now, it's unlikely that you would say that out loud if asked, but I think this is a hidden message that's just kind of buried in our DNA for those of us who maybe feel like you're one of those people who just kind of constantly wants to be checking things off the list. You don't want to fall behind. You've got things to do. We might feel, it might be true of us that we feel like if I stop, life's not going to work. Everything is going to crumble. This is a, I say this with gentleness, that is a brokenness in us as humans, feeling that need that like if I stop, it's just not going to work. It's not going to keep going. If we feel like we are sustaining our success or maintaining our life by our efforts on our own, on our own efforts, that is a form of our brokenness. If we think I could just keep on top of my to-do list, get ahead on this task or this project or not fall behind, then I'll be okay. It's part of the human condition. We want to feel like we are in control or at least not out of control. We want to feel like we have a handle on our life, our schedule, our tasks, and all that we have to do. And we can buy into that lie, this destructive lie that if we take our hands off, that it's just going to fall apart and crash. So let me remind you and myself, we cannot uphold the universe by being on top of things and checking off boxes. We cannot work enough to sustain or maintain our life. My limits are too limiting, and the needs of my life and the needs of our world are too many. I don't have the capacity, and neither do you. And so Sabbath is an invitation to remind your soul at a deep level that the world is going to keep on spinning, and you will be okay if you stop working for a day. It's a reminder for the soul of what we read in Hebrews chapter 1. Says that God upholds the universe by the word of his power. God upholds the universe just by his word. We don't uphold the universe by the completion of our tasks, by staying on top of things, or the Christian-y way of saying it that we mask this sometimes is by being good stewards. Sometimes we can put that language on, I'm just being a good steward of my life. Yes, sometimes it's being a good steward, but sometimes that's an excuse for not stopping and feeling like we are trying to control. Jesus upholds the universe by the word of his power, and we do not. And Sabbath rest will help us remember that. God wants us to remember our limits. It is a good thing. He wants us to remember that it is his power that takes care of us, and he wants us to receive the gift of rest, just like the first humans did. One more thing in closing. We're almost done. Our willingness to stop and rest and delight, whether it's for a full day or for 2 hours or 4 hours, maybe even in little kind of micro moments throughout the day where you're not accomplishing something and that voice is kind of hitting you, feeling like, I gotta do something, I gotta be productive. Our willingness in those moments to go, no, I'm not what I do. Our willingness to participate in this rhythm of rest, I think is an indication. It can be an indication of our acceptance of what Jesus has done in his death and his resurrection. Sabbath, I think, directly ties into the gospel, the good news. And our participation in it or not participating in it can be, it could be a representation of how deep the message of Jesus has worked its way into our soul and into our being. In Hebrews again, accepting the work of Jesus on the cross as like a finished fact for us is compared to entering Sabbath rest. Hebrews 4:9 says, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. So I believe what's happening here in Hebrews, without getting into everything around it, accepting the finished work of Jesus on the cross as our high priest mediating between us and God, accepting that is the ultimate expression of Sabbath rest. It is accepting the gift of a work that is already done for us, acknowledging that we can't contribute to it or add to it, that we couldn't have earned it in the first place. So why would we try to work for it? So Jesus' finished work, finished the work on the cross so that we could enter his rest, says Hebrews 4. So to make it clear, putting down your work and laying aside your need to keep doing things, the need to keep getting things done, one day a week is a reminder to your soul that we have limits, but that God does not. He'll provide for us, our world will keep on spinning, and similarly, when we come to Jesus for salvation, we are required to acknowledge the same thing. We are severely limited in what we can contribute to this thing called forgiveness, which is to say, we bring nothing to the table. We are ultimately limited. We bring nothing to the table except our yes to Jesus's offer. Yes, I will accept it. We have to lay aside our efforts of trying to earn the gift that Jesus gives. And if we live our lives trying to earn it, we prove that we misunderstand the gift and the giver himself, Jesus. So Sabbath rest is a gift of God. It is not earned by us. It is not earned by working hard. It is given by God as a blessing. And your relationship with Jesus also is a gift. His love for you, his approval of you, his acceptance of you as a beloved son or daughter has nothing to do with how hard you work at this thing called following Jesus. It has nothing to do with how good you are or how much or little you sin or fail. It is a gift based on what Jesus has done on his life, his record, which is now ours in Christ Jesus. Can I get an amen? It is Jesus' work on the cross that we are brought near, not our own work. So practicing Sabbath, this is how I'll end it. Practicing Sabbath might be a key to unlocking not just the rhythm of rest that could help you flourish in your existence as a human. It might be a key to unlocking and cultivating a heart that is truly saturated by the love of God, who requires nothing of you except to say yes and to place your faith in him and to stop trying to earn the love that he's already given to you. Okay, you are not what you do. You are the beloved of God. You are not a machine. You are a human who requires rest. And you don't need to earn this rest. It is a gift. It is not a rigid rule. It is an invitation to a way of life that might lead to flourishing. Let me just tell you, it is okay to take a break. You will be okay. The world will be okay. Last thing, we're going to close with this. We call it the breakfast benediction. We learned this from an author and a speaker named Jefferson Bethke. So I'd actually like to invite you to stand up with me. We're going to read this together. You'll repeat after me. The worship band can come on up here. And I've changed the last line just for this Sunday. So I'm going to do one line at a time. You'll repeat after me. I'm not what I have. Hold your hands like this. I'm not what I do. I am not what people say about me. I am the beloved of God. It's who I am. I don't have to hurry. I don't have to worry. I can trust my friend Jesus and rest in his love. Amen.